Our Mishnah, Mishnah Vav, in Parak Tes, continues theme of the previous Mishnah, which is that a woman follows her husband in terms of whether she can eat Truma or Maser. If her husband's a Kohen, she can eat Truma. If her husband's Levi, she can eat Maser. And if her husband's a Yisrael, she is not entitled to Truma or Maser. And so the Mishnah says, Bas Kohen Shenisei Sli Yisrael, Lo Tochal B'Truma. If a Bas Kohen, the daughter of a Kohen, who was early, entitled to Truma, then marries a Yisrael, she cannot eat Truma. She follows her husband's status, the Yisrael, the non-Kohen status, and she can't eat Truma. Mace, if her husband dies, though, v'lohim en ben, if she has a child with him, lo tochal b'truma, that relationship still is present, and she still cannot eat Truma. But niseis l'levi, then if she marries a Levi, this widow marries a Levi, tochal b'maser, she follows his status and can eat maser, as the Levi does. Mace, if he dies, v'lohim en ben, and has a child, she has a child with him, tochal b'maser, she can continue to eat maser based on the continuing relationship with from the child. Niseis the Kohen, if she goes and marries a Kohen, so she reverts her original status, and tochal b'truma, she can eat status, she can eat truma based on her relationship with her husband, the Kohen. Mace, if he dies, v'lohim en ben, but she has a child, tochal b'truma, she continues to eat truma based on the continuing status as a Kohen because of her child. Mace b'nami Kohen, but then if her Kohen child dies, lo tochal b'truma, she is no longer able to eat truma because she reverts to her earlier status as a having a relationship with the Levi, because her child, the Levi, is still alive, and she can only eat maser, not truma. Mace b'nami Levi, if her child with the Levi passes away, so that relationship is ended, lo tochal b'maser, she can no longer eat maser because she reverts to the first relationship, to the marriage and child with a Yisrael, and our Mishnah assumes that a Yisrael is not allowed to eat Truma and also not allowed to eat Maser, like the opinion of Rabbi Meir. Mace b'nami Yisrael, but then if her child from Yisrael passes away, so that relationship is completely ended, Chozeres l'beis avia. So all her marriage relationships are ended because the marriage is ended and the child has passed away. So she returns to her father's house, she reverts to her original status as a Bas Kohen, as the daughter of a Kohen, and she can eat Truma. V'alzu Nemar, and that's what the intention of the Pasuk in Emor, V'shava el Beis Avia Kinureh, she returns to her father's house as she was when she was originally unmarried to anyone, Milechem Avia Tochal, and she can partake of the bread of her father's house, meaning she can eat all forms of Truma. That concludes the ninth parak of Yevamos. Now we begin the tenth parak. So the tenth parak is operating in the under the shadow of heter, of the situation of an aguna. And the situation of an aguna is one classically in which the woman's husband has disappeared in some way, right? The Mishnah again, Taisha Shalach Bala Lamedina Siyam. In this case, the woman's husband went to abroad. He went to a different country, and where communication is not easy. So you don't know she doesn't know what happened to him. He didn't return at the agreed upon time. And so we don't know where he is. We don't know if he's died, if he's delayed, if he's sick somewhere. We don't know what his status is. And because we don't know what his status is, she is stuck. We don't know what her status is. Because if he's still alive, then of course she's an Eishesish. She's a married woman, and she cannot get remarried without a get. But if he's dead, then she can get remarried. She should get remarried if she desires to. And so the question becomes, what is this woman's status? She is an aguna. She's tied to her husband because of this lack of knowledge. And so the Chazal decided that we should try to be matir the agunas, right? We should try to get her out of this extraordinarily painful situation. And the mechanism they used to get her out of the situation was actually by being lenient on the standard of testimony about her husband's death. Meaning, generally, to be matir a woman, to permit a woman to marry someone, we need the highest level of testimony. We need the testimony of two witnesses. But Chazal said that in this situation, it might be difficult to get the testimony of two witnesses, and so they were willing to permit this woman on the basis of the testimony of just one witness, on the condition that the woman herself does a very high level investigation of the situation, because the Chazal trusted the investigation of the woman to determine, is her husband really dead? So on the basis of testimony of just one witness, plus the detailed investigation of the woman into whether her husband's dead, Chazal said, okay, if both of those, both the testimony and her investigation, say that the husband is actually dead, even though we don't have the highest level, the expected level of testimony for that, we can permit this woman to remarry. But on the other hand, even though they trusted the woman to do this high-level investigation, they wanted to ensure that she would do the best investigation possible. And so therefore, the Mishnah will describe that the Chazal set up a structure of kenosos, a structure of a penalty, in which if the woman, if the husband returns, if the woman investigates the issue and finds that her husband's dead, and then it turns out that, in fact, her husband's not dead, so we would penalize her in the ways that the Mishnah listed. And the reason we penalize her is to ensure that she does the proper high-level investigation. So what are these penalties? So the Mishnah says, Vayisha shalach ba'al medinas yam, the woman whose husband went overseas and she's stuck in this extraordinarily challenging, difficult situation of being in the guna, of being tied to a husband who might not even be alive. Uba'av amrla meis palach. And they came back, meis palach. They came back and they said, your husband is dead. Your husband has passed away. Vinises, and she gets remarried. So she gets married on the basis of this one aid, on the basis of her own investigation, which says that her husband is actually dead. But then her husband came back. So we see that her investigation did not really reveal the truth, because here her husband is, he's alive in front of us, and that marriage was never fully ended. And she has entered into this other relationship, really as an Eishes Ish, as a married woman, which is a Chi of Karis in the Misa, and the mom, and the child is a mamzer. So therefore, the Mishnah says, as part of the penalty for that, Teitzei Mizeh Mizeh, she has to divorce both the original husband, meaning her original husband has to divorce her even though that marriage is still existent, and she has to divorce the second man, even though she was never really married to him, because she was already married to the first husband, but she must separate from him, and she cannot get married to him at any point in the future. Utricha get mizeh mizeh, and she needs a get from both the first husband, a real get from the first husband, and a get midrabanan from the second husband to ensure her separation from him. Ve'in la ksuba, and as part of the penalty, we don't allow her to collect the ksuba, velo peros, right? And we don't allow her to collect peros. We don't allow her to recollect the fruits that her second husband has eaten in the time that she's been married to him, the fruits that he's eaten from her property that are originally hers. So we would have thought that since he ate them unjustifiably, she can collect them from him because she was never really married to him. But as part of the penalty, we say that she can't collect the fruits that he ate under the presumption of marriage from the fields that she owned. Velo mazonos. And she can't collect the cost of food, meaning even if she had borrowed money for food prior to her marriage to the second husband, and it was money she borrowed because she didn't know where she would get food from, and so she borrowed money to buy food, and then got married to the second guy on the assumption that her husband was dead, and so we would think that her first husband should have to repay her for the money she borrowed for food, because really he was obligated to provide her with food even when he was away, even when he was abroad, and instead she had to borrow money for that. So we say, no, she's penalized, and she can't even collect the money from the food prior to her marriage to the second guy. Below Belaos, and she can't recollect her property that was used up. Let's say she had some clothing that she brought into the marriage, and her husband used the clothing in whatever way, So if that money, if that clothing, or if that property in some way depreciated, right? Let's say it was a car and there was a steep depreciation in the car over the time that her second husband was using it, she is not able to collect payment for that depreciation, even though she was never really married. Lo al zeh, lo al zeh. She can't collect these things from either husband. We penalize her that even the things that, in general, a woman would get when she separates from her husband, even a ksuba, which a woman is entitled to as a contract she entered into at the time of the marriage, that the Chazal penalize her and remove her rights to collect that. Im not only that, and more, even if she collected from one of these people, she went over to them and asked them for it and they gave it to her, or she collected it in some form of court, tach there, so she's obligated to return that money. V'havlad not mamzer mizeh. And the vlad is a mamzer from both the first and the second husbands, meaning the second husband, the vlad is obviously a mamzer from, because she was never really married to him. That was a ashes-ish relationship. She was a married woman having relations with a man when she was married. So the child is obviously a mamzer. And also, the Mishnah says, if she goes back to the first husband, if after he comes back she reunites with him and has a child from him, so the vlad, even though she's really married to him, but the Chazal determined that the vlad, that the child should be considered a mamzer midrabanan to ensure her separation from the first husband. And her relationship is severed to the extent that neither the first husband or the second husband, if they are kohanim, can become tamei to her. Classically, a husband is obligated, even if he's a kohen, a husband is obligated to become tamei to his wife after she passes away. But in this scenario, we want to separate her from both her first husband, her real husband, and the second man. And so therefore we say that neither man, if he's a kohen, can attend her funeral and can become tamei to her. Lo zev zeh zakayin, lo b'mitziyasa, lo b'maaseh yadav, lo b'afaras nedarah. And the other way also, we want to complete the separation. And so even the things that the man would generally have rights to as part of the marriage, those are also ended. So her first husband, who is rightfully married her, can no longer collect her mitzios, can no longer collect her lost objects. If she found a expensive diamond ring, she gets to keep that, because generally that goes to her husband, so as not to create undue tension in the marriage, right? It has to be shared property. But in this case, she is able to retain that because we want to sever that relationship. Lo b'maaseh yadav, whatever she makes in the workplace, so she gets to keep that because we sever that relationship with her husband. Her husband has no rights to that money, v'lo b'afaras nedarah, and the husband cannot be made for nedarim, has no right to revoke her neder, to revoke her vows, which the husband usually has rights to do. But in this case, the Chazal revoked the husband's right, even though he is still married to her on the Torah level, but the Chazal revoked the husband's right to remove her nedarim, so that the connection between the two will be completely severed, and he will be forced to divorce her. So those are the consequences of this inadequate research that she had done, that in which Chazal penalized her by ending the relationship between her husband and her in both directions. And then there are further consequences for her as well. Ha'isa b'nas Yisrael nifsala min hakuna. So if she was a bas Yisrael, if she's the daughter of Yisrael, she's now pasul to a kohen, right? Just as a woman in general who has an illicit relationship is pasul from marrying a kohen, so this woman too, who had a illicit relationship, is not allowed to marry a kohen, because the relationship with the second man was illicit because she was married to the first man. The bas levi, and if she was a bas levi, she's pasul from mina maser. She's pasul from maser. That is, as a kenas, right? Even though generally a woman who has an illicit relationship, if she's a l a woman who's a Levi would be allowed to eat maaser, but in this case, the Chachamim gave her a knas, gave her a penalty that she's not allowed to eat maaser anymore. Bas Kohen min haTruma, and the Bas Kohen is pasul from is excluded from all forms of Truma. Vein Yorshim Shalzev, Yorshim Shalzev, Yorshim S. Ksubasa, and the Yorshim, the heirs of each husband, no longer inherit her Ksuba. So if all details of the contract of the Ksuba are now revoked, including any conditions that were made that her children from the husband should inherit the money she brought into the marriage. Then Mesu, and if either husband passed away, Achav Shalzev, Achav Shalzev, Cholzin Velo Miyabin Min. So in this case, let's say she didn't have any children. So, but her brothers-in-law from both the first husband and the second man have a requirement of doing chalitza. The first husband's brother has to do chalitza because there's a din of yibum or chalitza from the Torah, and so we require him to do chalitza. And the second husband's quote-unquote husband's brother, her brother-in-law from the second man, also must do chalitza because there was a sort of relationship there that the Rabbanan Chazal wanted to completely sever, and therefore required him to do chalitza so that there'd be no confusion about her status from that marriage. Rabbi Yossi Omer Ksubasa Nechsei Bala Rishon. So now the Mishnah goes through three opinions of rabbis who actually said that we're not going to be as strict on her as the first part of the Mishnah had suggested. So Rabbi Yossi Omer Ksubasa Nechsei Bala Rishon. Rabbi Yossi says no. The contract that they had agreed to on marriage, the ksuba, which entitles her to a certain amount of money at the time of divorce or at the time of death. So now she's going to be divorced from her first husband. So she has the right to collect based on the ksuba contract. Right? The fact that she did an inadequate research and her first husband came back. So we have certain levels of penalties, but we don't give her financial penalties that revoke the contract, that dissolve the contract that she had originally agreed to on the first marriage. Her ksuba still exists. She can still collect the money, even if the child is a mamzer, etc. Rabbi Elazar Omer, Harishon Zaka Mitzuyasev Amasa Yadev, Bafaras Nandara. Rabbi Elazar says that the first husband, the husband she was originally married to, is still entitled to her found objects, to her Maisi Adayim, to her work, and is still entitled to revoke her Nedarim, to revoke her promises that she takes as a Neder. And that's because she is still married to the first husband. So even though Rabbi Elazar says, even though we penalized her in all these sorts of ways, that doesn't actually end the marriage, and so therefore the things that the husband is entitled to, we don't penalize him. He was just gone. He might have been sick, or he doesn't deserve penalty, and therefore he is still entitled to the things he normally is entitled to in marriage, which includes her found objects, her work, and he is entitled to revoke her nedarim. The marriage is not over from his perspective yet until the divorce document goes through. Rabbi Shimon Omer Biaso Chalitzas Miachol Shlarita Rishon Poteras Sarasa Veinav Lami Menu Mazer. Rabbi Shimon says that actually, if this first husband returns and then he immediately dies, and she never had a child with him, so after his death, that first relationship is severed. Rabbi Shimon says immediately, right? Now he is actually dead. That relationship is done, as people had assumed. So even though she has all these penalties in theory, but now he's dead. So what do we do? That relationship is severed. So Rabbi Shimon says, we've accomplished our goal. Right? She has severed all relations with the first husband. Now she'll sever relations with the second husband. And now she can go marry, through Yibum, the brother of the first husband, her brother-in-law. The din of Yibum, or Chalitza, still applies because this is a different relationship It was built on the relationship with the first husband, which is why the Tanakhama had said she can't do Yibum to her brother-in-law from her first husband. But Rabbi Shimon says, no, the first husband, that relationship, he's dead, the relationship is over. Now she has the right to do Yibum if her brother-in-law so chooses, she has the right to do Yibum to him and to marry him. And that Yibum will exempt her tzara, right? Only one, as we learned in the first parak, only one or the other of the two women married to a man do Yibum or Chalitza, and then the other one is immediately exempted. So her Bia, her Yibum to the brother-in-law is a full Yibum and will exempt her tzara, will exempt her co-wife from entering into Yibum or Chalitza. She can now go free, meaning it's a completely valid Chalitza. Veina vlad bimenu mamser. And Rabbi Shimon also says that if her first husband does take her back, the vlad is not a mamzer. There's no status of a mamzer derabanan. She was married to the first man. If he takes her back, even though he is maybe not supposed to, but even so, Chazal do not give a derabanan mamzer status to that child. V'im niseis shlo bereshos. And now the Mishnah concludes with a variant on the case of the whole Mishnah. What happens if she married without the Rishus Beis Din, meaning she married without the special exemption that had been determined by Chazal, that even if she only has one aid, even if there's only one person testifying to the death of her husband, Chazal had said that she's allowed to be married. But what if she had two witnesses testifying to the fact that her husband is dead, which is the normal standard for aidus, the normal standard for testimony? So then she's perfectly justified in marrying, and we don't really need a special exemption from Beis Din to allow her to remarry, because she has two witnesses, she's lived up to the standard of testimony, and she can remarry. So what happens if two witnesses came and said that her husband is dead, and she remarried, as she is expected to, or as she, if she wants to, so she remarries, and then her husband comes back. So it becomes clear that the two witnesses had inaccurate information or were lying or some sort of mistake happened along the way. So now she's married to the second person, and that's an illicit marriage because her first husband is still alive. So the Mishnah says, Mutaras Lachzarlo. So in that case, the Mishnah says, all the penalties are off. We only penalize her in this way because we expect her to live up to a standard of investigation, that we place some of the onus of investigating the matter of her husband's death on her. But that's only if there's only one witness, so that we don't have the standard form of testimony, so we place some of the responsibility of the investigation on her, and therefore we give her all these penalties to ensure that she does the proper investigation. But if two witnesses had come, in which case she's not expected to do a high level of investigation, because we have the highest standard of testimony, of confirmation that her husband passed away, and so she's completely justified in getting remarried if she desires, but then her husband comes back and it turns out it was an illicit marriage, so therefore the Mishnah says we don't put on her all these penalties, and Muteras Lachzarlo, she is permitted to remarry the first husband because she is a complete anusa, is a completely not her responsibility, and the second marriage is completely meaningless.